Hey!
What's up, Mile Higher homies? Welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast.
What's up, Earthlings?
How you guys doing? Episode 14 here.
Episode number 14, covering secret bases today.
Oh my gosh.
This is some pretty interesting shit. I think you'll find this pretty entertaining today.
Yeah,
and
I haven't learned about it yet.
Insightful. So hopefully you guys will like today's episode. But welcome back, everybody. It's Josh, Kendall, aka Josh Aldor and Kendall Ray. We are back on the podcast for another episode. Before we jump into today's topics, just wanted to say that for those that did not know, I am on Twitch streaming now. So if you haven't checked out my Twitch channel yet or come out and hang out with us on a stream.
It's so fun.
It's a lot of fun. We've been streaming all week. Mm-hmm. I stream 5 days a week.
I feel like I have been on
and you've been on
at
least a couple times. Yeah.
So yeah. And it's like really awesome because normally there's only about 100 people on at once and we can like get to know them and have really deep and personal conversations, which is so cool. It's kind of like a meetup.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. It's exactly like a virtual kind of hangout spot,
yeah.
Meetup. Basically, we just play games on there, various different types of games, play Sims and GTA with Kendall, and then I play some other stuff, Fortnite and what have you. But it's a lot of fun, guys, so definitely come check it out. Mm-hmm. Link's in the description. And for those that are listening, it's twitch.tv/Josh Aldor, and you should be able to find me, no problem. But yeah, come check us out. Come follow. It's a good time. Plus, we'll be streaming the podcast there at some point. I don't know. We don't have an exact date planned yet for that, but it will be within the next couple of weeks. I think we'll do a live streamed episode of the Mile Higher Podcast. And we're kind of thinking of doing like kind of a Q&A type thing. Since it'll be live on Twitch, would
kind
be
kind of an open,
more of an interactive discussion, kind of talking about what you guys want to talk about.
Yeah.
And, you know, giving you guys an opportunity to get to know us. And it's
so make
it'll
sure
be a
you follow
time.
On Twitch so you don't miss it when that happens.
Yes. Yes. Make sure you do that. But we also like to thank our stellar patrons. We got a new one this week. It's Jocelyn B. Thank you so much for becoming a stellar patron. We
yes,
appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, Jocelyn.
And the others are Elizabeth B. and Rebecca H. So thank you guys. And thank you to all of our other patrons out there. We love you guys. We appreciate the support. Like we said, the podcast has not been monetized yet on YouTube or anything.
It's
so
been 14 weeks since we
YouTube
submitted.
Is just either YouTube is like just doesn't want to monetize our fucking podcast for whatever reason. Or they're just literally taking their sweet ass time.
I think they're taking their sweet ass time.
So we'll hopefully that'll get done soon. Because we have so many cool episodes planned that we've been kind of waiting to do. You definitely want to be there for those. So be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe on iTunes, leave a rating, leave a review. If you enjoy the podcast, we appreciate it. But today's Patreon question comes from Emily Hooper, and she said, I know this might be a big and open question, but if you ever happen to somehow bump into another life form, I'm assuming alien from another planet, what do you think your reactions would be? What would we say when we would ask them?
Well, I think it would depend on like what it was.
Depend on the species of the alien, I think. If it's like a Nordic alien or something that looks like a humanoid, it might be kind of hard to tell at first, or like really, you know whether or not they're from, you know, another star system or something. But if it was like a little gray or something,
what would you ask them?
Oh man, I would ask them. I'd ask them, where are you from?
Yep.
Where are you from? Do you know who made you?
Yes.
That way I can distinguish whether or not they're a real biological life form, or if they're some sort of like clone life form or some sort of android or something.
Wow, you thought this out. You always get to think about the question because you know it in advance. I didn't even get to think about it.
And then I would ask them, you know, what kinds of technology do you have? Is there anything you can show me, or can you prove to me that you're an extraterrestrial? It would be pretty wild to run into an alien, I think. But it would be super cool.
So I would want to know like what life is like for them. Just like explain like your understanding of life.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think the meaning of life is? I mean, don't we all want to know that?
Yeah. And just like, what is your life? Like,
right.
Like, what do you do? Like, what's your point? What's your purpose?
What's the purpose?
What do you do? Do you love? Do you have emotions? Like, what is your life like?
I think that's, I think a lot of us would probably have similar feelings about that.
Yeah.
Because I think we're all just curious to know, you know, the secrets of life and the universe and, you know,
yeah,
to see if maybe these other species are, you know, more high, you know, more advanced than we are, and they are probably consciousness wise on a higher level than we are, so they probably understand things better than we do. So
yeah,
it'd be fun to pick an alien's brain for a day.
It would. Sounds weird, it'd be super fun.
It'd be super fun to pick an alien's brain. But thank you, Emily, for that question.
Thank you, Emily.
Something else we wanted to talk about before we jump into the bases is this crazy fucking story or case about the Hart family. And I don't know if you guys have seen this on the news or just seen it on the internet or Twitter.
I'm sure most of you have. It's pretty, made pretty big news.
Pretty bizarre and pretty wild. So basically what happened is there's a lot of mystery surrounding a fatal car crash that involves the Hart family, where their SUV plunged off of a coastal highway in California.
Yeah, and at first, you know, they thought it was an accident. This family accidentally drove off.
This is a month ago, by the way.
Yes.
Last month in March.
So everyone was so upset
about
this poor family. And this is a family of two lesbian mothers and their six children from all different countries.
Six adopted kids.
So like, and they take pictures of them like meditating and doing yoga, and they really like live this like earthy, crunchy Zen life that you wouldn't think there's anything going wrong. So people thought, you know.
Yeah, it's really bizarre because the mystery around it is the fact that it literally drove off the side of a cliff.
Yeah.
And what happened was is that when they recovered the vehicle, the software of the vehicle suggested that it was going 90 miles an hour off of the cliff.
There was no evidence of braking either. There were no brake marks or skid marks as if someone was trying to brake.
Right.
There was no evidence. It
seems intentional.
It is intentional from what the crime scene tells us. So that is confusing because, you know, you have this family that's like this great family. And I'm going to be talking about this case on my channel as well, but I'm waiting for more information to come out because
it's still under investigation. So,
yeah, I could see this going either way because the son, one of their sons, had a really famous picture hugging a police officer after Michael Brown passed away.
Yeah, Devontae.
This police department's going really hard after them. So I am not going to jump to conclusions and accuse these parents of purposely driving their whole family off the side of the cliff till there's more evidence. But there is some evidence.
There is some stuff.
There's some solid stuff. So I'm just saying I wanted to wait for more information before I made a full video.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So there were six kids and then the two parents. And the parents' names are Jennifer and Sarah, and they were both 38 years old. And they were found inside the SUV that went over into the ocean.
Buckled in. They were buckled in. None of the kids were buckled in.
Yes. And then the children, Marcus, who was 19, Jeremiah and Abigail, who were 14, were also found nearby the vehicle. And then just recently, like last week, I think, another of the female bodies turned up after a storm. And they're not sure who it is. It could either be Hannah, who is 16, or Sierra, who was 12. But there's still one girl and Devontae, the 15-year-old boy, that are still missing. So
the question is, did they do this? Or,
what are you saying?
I'm also curious about if these other two kids are missing in the crime scene or if they didn't even make it with them on the trip.
No, they were in the vehicle.
They know they've that
pretty
for
much,
sure.
Yeah, they've pretty much like, there's no other real scenario where they couldn't be.
Why?
The investigators are fairly certain they were in the vehicle. The whole family was in the vehicle.
Okay. Because I was thinking maybe they did something and then committed suicide as a result of what?
Yeah. And the reason why there is, you know, people are questioning this so much is because one of the moms, Sarah, she pleaded guilty in 2011 to a domestic assault charge in Minnesota over what she said was a spanking given to one of her children. So she got a domestic assault charge for spanking. That's...
Not only that, but 4 months before the crash, a man made a 911 call regarding the family detailing one of the children's attempts to get help. 911 call was released for the first time on Wednesday, this past Wednesday. Apparently, there was like a kid climbing out of their house asking for help out of a window.
Asking for food.
Mm-hmm. Asking for food.
Yeah, I have the actual quote here.
The man said, there's some kids...
There's some kids that I feel
are being highly abused.
Yeah, they have four black children, but that part doesn't matter. He told dispatch, they're new here. But the other night, a little girl jumped out of the second story window, on the roof, and then down to the ground, and then ran to my daughter And this is at like 2 a.m. begging them to help her. He said the girl cried and begged his daughter not to let her parents know that she was there. They were notified and one of the parents came over. Then one of the parents, had all four of the kids come back later and say everything was okay. And they were standing at attention like they were all scared to death, the man told dispatch. And I think there's something very serious going on there.
Wow.
And the girl didn't specify why she was scared. He said the caller said he had to report the incident after his daughter told him about it. And the more I sit on it, I just can't live with it. Somebody has to go there and check on the kids, he said. And this was back in November of last year when this man told dispatch about this event. And then, yeah, it's at least four events in which the kids had appeared to have told other adults about troubles at home, in a case that is continuing to raise questions. So it's pretty, I don't know, things are sort of stacking to allude to a conclusion of that there may have been some abuse involved for sure. And yeah, it's possible, because it's interesting that CPS in Washington State was trying to visit the family after the report of a child's complaint of mistreatment. And when the officials came to visit the Hart's home in Woodland, Washington, no one answered. And this was literally right before the crash. Yeah.
Oh.
Right before.
Maybe they didn't want to get caught for like really something, you know.
Well, that's what I'm kind of thinking is like, I think
they didn't want their image to go away of like this zen mom.
Well, that's the thing is they've been like, put it like, if you look at pictures of them as a family, they have them all at like the Bernie Sanders rally and they're all wearing their shirts and
they're
all like happy this liberal, and this like little activist family basically.
Yeah.
Of adopted kids and this lesbian couple, but it's starting to seem like there might be worse things going on than we know about.
Well, listen to that seems like that's what's going on. But at the same time, I do know that police will make people look horrible when they've done nothing wrong. And it's very easy to be persuaded by police. So,
what about the kids?
Call, yeah, I know. That's what makes it hard.
The kids are literally saying that they're not getting fed. Multiple events
that's
where
they're complaining. That's what one man said.
I think there's more witnesses that corroborate these kids' stories. So, I mean, it makes sense.
It looks that way. It looks like abuse and it looks like purposeful.
And it looks like suicide because they're about to get all their kids taken from them or something.
Yeah, maybe. I think it was more about their image. Okay, listen to this clip. This is their friends talking about them.
Family friends insist the couple was loving.
Jen and Sarah were the most loving two moms that we could have ever seen on this earth, caring for 6 beautiful adopted children.
A complicated legacy that remains a mystery.
So I don't know.
So that's one neighbor or friend of them.
They're like close friends. I don't know. It sucks because there's not anyone left
to
testify to their abuse or how the crash happened. I'm not saying I think that they didn't do it. I think they did. I'm trying to, keep all options on the table. But I'm about 90% convinced they just drove off. It looks that way. That's what the evidence points to. They had a video of the mom getting, one of the moms getting bananas and like fruit and stuff at a grocery store right before the crash that morning. So,
and they don't really
look, feeding them.
Like from the pictures, they don't look like abused children.
No, they look happy. It's just like the weirdest thing. So I'm just trying to keep it all, you know, I've just seen so many cases where things change very quickly and it's like you don't want to jump to conclusions till you like have everything or as much as you can out. So.
It's just weird that the investigators have figured out that they stopped at an overlook before, like an overlook on the coastal highway before proceeding to then like floor it going 90 miles an hour off the side of the cliff.
Yep.
So what happened between then and then? Like maybe there was some sort of fight in the car or maybe there was something going on and
that's the thing they lost control. We won't ever get to know. It'd be cool if cars had black boxes that recorded like the last conversation.
Like recorded the audio and stuff.
Yeah.
And the video. Like they had a dash cam or something.
Right.
Yeah. Cause it's just such a wild one. It's hard to say.
It is.
But this case is still under investigation. So
we'll keep you updated on it or I'll do a video on it.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll do a video on it.
Yeah.
It's super
interesting. I'm actually planning to. It's already on my calendar.
Cause they're still investigating it. So we'll see where that leads. All right, here we go. Today we're going to talk about some of the...
Oh, hang on. I need a break for a second.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to hit my monk for a second before we started and...
Monk.
Well, tell you guys about a change with my monk.
Yes.
Affiliate. If you are listening, you can't see me hitting my monk pen. These are personal essential oil diffuser pens. They come in 10 or 11 now, different varieties, feeling blends, nature blends, and they're incredible. They're my favorite thing ever. And I just wanted to let you guys know that the code no longer works for me. So if you want to get a discount, you have to use the link, and we'll have that link in the description box. But yes. I needed a little Zen pen before I start this because this is crazy. This stuff helps a lot with anxiety.
Yes, because we're going to get into some interesting stuff. Is the discount code, or it's not a discount code anymore. It's a link.
Yeah.
And the link gets you the 10% off?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, Monk is really great. The personal oil diffuser pens. We really like them a lot.
They're really the only thing I push or promote other than Cloud9.
Yeah,
they're
very good.
I like what
good.
I like. You know, I'm really picky about what I... What I share, and
this
I love
this is good
Monk.
Quality product, though, for sure.
It is. It's amazing.
The Monk.
All right, I'm ready.
All right, so we are going to talk about. There's a lot. I mean, this topic is so broad and so huge that we could literally do multiple episodes about this, and we probably will, because today we're only going to cover a couple different things, and basically we want to talk about some of the top secret bases that are out there that could be there, and. Some of those include Area 51. We're going to talk about the Dolce base and then a possible underwater base that's been discovered.
Ooh.
So
the, underwater base.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. So
I'm excited to hear all this.
Top secret bases. And when we're talking about top secret bases, we're generally talking about military installations. And sometimes, you know, it could be a military installation, but it could also be, you know, some other type of installation, even extraterrestrial base. But the ones that we're talking about today are specific to the military. Because as we all know, the military has a lot of secrecy within it. It's very yeah. compartmentalized. It's very split up. And guys, their installations are everywhere. They've infiltrated everywhere, including under the ocean. So the first base that we're going to talk about is perhaps the most famous one. We did a Trippy Talk video about it where we kind of covered some of the basics. So if you haven't seen that, definitely watch that. But Area 51. Everybody loves talking about Area 51. Everybody's fascinated by Area 51 because it's an awesome thing to talk about because of all of the things that have happened around it, a lot of the conspiracies around it, a lot of the different things that have been cited over it. It's very, very interesting. So what exactly is going on inside Area 51, and why, guys, did it take the CIA until 2013 to acknowledge its existence? That is a very interesting question.
It is.
Why did they wait so long to actually come out and say, oh yeah, there is what you guys are seeing and hearing about is a secret base?
Because I think at one point, Area 51 really was like one of the top bases, if not
one of the top secret bases,
especially for a secret space program and aliens. So I think once people found out and became a thing and, you know, movies started taking, eventually they had to admit that it, because wasn't it like 2004 that they admitted that?
2003.
Well, still, that's like a long time of people seeing that it exists before they ever acknowledge that it
did. I mean, people knew about it way back even into the 80s and 90s because of Bob Lazar, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, that's what I'm later. Saying is they kept it a secret for a really long time. So
they denied it. They would just deny it
if
every
time.
They
were denying it. Look, they wouldn't deny it if that base had nothing going on at it. Obviously, there was something there to make them deny it. They wouldn't deny the existence of a base unless there was something going on there.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they change their mind and decide to like let everyone know it is real. So sounds like things got moved or
something's going
they
on.
They gave up on that location because they're like too many people are trying right.
Well,
to like, get in here.
There's a lot of conspiracies. The most popular ones have to do with the fact that at one point, whether it's still there or it was there at one time, there was extraterrestrial possibly bodies and spacecraft that were stored at Area 51. That's one of the most popular ones. And especially going back to the Roswell incident, where we recovered UFO or we recovered extraterrestrial spacecraft. And a lot of people believe that was either taken to Los Alamos or to and then on to Area 51 possibly. And what's interesting is that one of the most interesting conspiracies is about the 1947 Roswell crash, which I just mentioned. But it actually involves a Soviet aircraft piloted by mutated midgets. And the wreckage remains on the grounds of Area 51. So that's just another conspiracy that, which we got to do it. We got to do an episode about Roswell because there's so much with Roswell, too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different things and there's a lot of different theories about what happened at Roswell. And what's also interesting is that some people even believe that in 1969, the U.S. government and NASA actually filmed the 1969 moon landing in one of the base's hangars. That's another popular theory, is that it was used to film footage.
The moon landing.
For the moon landings. Again, another...
Just a theory.
Another episode.
Oh, another episode for that.
Yeah, it's just... No, I'm just kind of... I'm just giving you a premise of some of the theories that are associated with this military base known as Area 51. So what we're going to try to do is present some of the evidence, and then it's up to you guys to decide whether or not these conspiracies are true. And if, you know, whether or not they're true or not is one thing, but Area 51 is still a very active and real base.
Yes.
It is very real. It's very heavily secured. I mean, you can go on YouTube and watch all the different videos of people
trying to
roaming around Area 51, yeah. And
it's funny.
It's the real deal, man. I mean, they don't fuck around at Area 51. They've got cameras everywhere. They've got sensors embedded into the road, the dirt roads leading to it. So they literally can see everything. They can hear everything. They literally have extremely good surveillance on the perimeter of the base. And you will be stopped and fined. I think it's like $600 for attempting to like go into Area 51.
Oh, damn.
It starts at $600 fine.
$600?
To try to cross like into Area 51, which a lot of people try to do.
That ain't worth it. It's a lot.
So Area 51, for those that don't know, is also officially known as Groom Lake or Homie Airport. That's the official name for the airport.
Homie Airport.
Homie Air, yeah.
Which just sounds
Homie
funny.
Airport. And it is a remote detachment of Edwards Air Force Base. So it is a part of an actual Air Force Base. And according to the CIA, the correct names for the Area 51 facility are the Nevada Test and Training Range and Groom Lake. Though the name Area 51 has been used in official CIA documentation.
Oh, they have?
They have used Area 51.
The name.
Mm-hmm. Other names that have been used for the facility include Dreamland, Paradise Ranch, Home Base, Watertown Strip, and then, of course, the Homie Airport.
And wouldn't you do anything for a tour of that place?
I think pretty much all of us would do anything for a tour of that.
Gotta be incredible.
The presidents don't even get a tour of the place. No. They don't even let the presidents go there. Mm-mm. That would be my first thing. Like, we're going to, I'm going to tour every single military installation.
No, they say no.
No, they literally deny you because you don't have clearance.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
The clearance in order to get into Area 51 is much, much higher than even the president has.
Yep.
And you literally, like, when you get brought into these top secret programs and top secret Air Force bases to do whatever work you're doing, it's the real deal. You sign a non-disclosure agreement for 15 years or something. It's like 15 or 20 years that you can't even talk about.
And I'm sure they threaten you not only with like suing you in money, but like death.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they do. If you start getting out of hand, they'll be like,
we're not afraid to put a bullet in your head. So.
We know you just had a son, Josh, but
yeah.
If we hear any more about this Area 51 you keep talking about,
bye-bye,
little
Josh.
Elon Woke might be gone when you come home.
Elon Woke. We named our son Elon Woke on Sims. If you are not on our Twitch, you're missing out. It's so funny.
It is so funny.
You gotta get back on there and have another baby. Anyway.
But for those that don't know where Area 51 is, it is in the southwest portion of Nevada, 83 miles northwest of Las Vegas. And at the center of this area is the shores of Groom Lake and a large military airfield.
Hmm.
And the base's current primary purpose is officially undetermined. So to this day, we still really have no idea what they're doing there. We have no clue. Zero clue.
Oh, that makes me feel good.
But based upon historical evidence, it does seem to be used for highly classified military defense special access programs. Where have we heard that before? unacknowledged, publicly special access programs.
Yeah.
Government, military personnel, and defense contractors. Its mission may be to support the development, testing, and training phases for new aircraft weapon systems or research projects. And because they have remained so, they've kept such secrecy around the base, it's obviously been the root of a lot of conspiracy theories and also a central component in the unidentified flying object phenomenon.
Yeah.
Because Area 51, the area around it in the Nevada desert is like, is a very hot place for UFO sightings. For just unidentified.
It's a hot place and it's a hot place.
It's right? Literally.
It's literally.
I didn't realize I just said hot place.
Yeah.
It's a hotbed for UFOs.
Yeah, but we're not sure if that's like all, because there are probably, or at one point have been like really advanced aircraft at Area 51 or around there, or like a lot of them, like the U-2 plane. Remember there was like tons of sightings.
Yeah, I was about to talk about that. Yeah.
There were tons of sightings of the U-2, of UFOs around the time that we had the U-2 plane, which was reflective.
Mm-hmm.
And so a ton of people thought it was a UFO because in the sky it's reflecting the sun. Not saying that there wasn't UFOs, because there definitely could be, but like I think there's more chances, there's more of a chance of people just seeing like military stuff and mm-hmm. thinking it's something, because it's not necessarily something we normally right. see.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. Is the U, so the U-2 spy plane is really where Area 51 began.
Yeah.
After World War II, the Soviet Union lowered,
where they were building that stuff, right?
Right, right. Because after World War II, the Soviet Union lowered the Iron Curtain around themselves and the rest of the Eastern Bloc, creating a near-intelligence blackout to the rest of the world. And when the Soviets backed North Korea's invasion of South Korea in June 1950, it had become increasingly clear that the Kremlin would aggressively expand its influence. And America, worried about the USSR's or Russia's technology and intentions and ability to launch a surprise attack, because this was only a decade removed from the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. So we were yeah. very scared about another surprise yeah. attack, much like Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. So in the early 1950s, the U.S. Navy and Air Force sent low-flying aircraft on reconnaissance missions over the USSR, but they were at constant risk of being shot down. So that's when in 1954, President Eisenhower approved the secret development of a high-altitude reconnaissance aircraft called the U-2 program. So when he started this, the first orders of business was to track down a remote covert location for training and testing. And that's when they found the location in the southern Nevada desert where Area 51 is.
I mean, it makes sense, especially back then.
And it actually had been a World War II aerial gunnery range for the Army Air Corps pilots, actually. And this middle of nowhere site became a top secret military base after that. And to convince workers to come, Kelly Johnson, one of the leading engineers of the U-2 project, gave it a more enticing name, Paradise Ranch.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, like, how would you get people to want to come work out in the middle of the fucking desert?
Nowhere, yeah. Unless you make it an awesome place.
So not only call it Paradise Ranch, but there's also people that have worked at Area 51 that have said that back in the day, during the U-2 days, it was like Paradise Ranch. They'd have steak, lobster, crab every night, all you can eat. They had bowling alleys. It was like a lit place. Like, yeah. It was fun. You know, they had a lot of stuff. You know, after you're done back engineering alien craft for the day, you can go have a steak and lobster and play some and do some bowling. So
yeah, that's pretty Paradise Ranch.
So the U-2 spy plane testing began in July 1955. And immediately, once they started testing this and flying this thing around the desert, reports came flooding in about UFO sightings. And many of these sightings were observed by commercial airline pilots who had never seen an aircraft fly at such high altitudes as the U-2. So you have to remember that the U-2 is completely top secret. Nobody knows about it. So if you're just an ordinary person or just a commercial airline pilot and you're seeing this, like you said, this glowing object flying above you, you're like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
You know, you're going to start immediately questioning what it is.
Because you're like, I've never seen something like that before.
Right.
Even yesterday, I thought I saw a UFO. I was like sitting in our bed and it was like cloudy out, and I saw this like really bright flash, this really bright red light, like zoom across the sky, like so fast. Like there's no way it was a plane. But I was like, maybe it was my eyes, like debris in my eye floating around. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, yeah.
But I always think I see UFOs. So I think there are, you know, obviously real UFO sightings, obviously. But I think a lot of them are mistaken.
Yes.
It's just advanced technology that they don't understand that we have.
Yes, yes. We'll talk about that more in a minute. So in the 1950s, airplanes did not fly as high as they do today. Like, any plane that you guys go on and fly goes up to 40,000 feet most of the time, 40 to 45,000 feet. Well, back in the 50s, airlines only flew at 10 to 20,000 feet. So they were much, much lower. So that's why they were so blown away by this U-2 plane that was flying at it could fly in excess of 60,000 feet, actually. That's extremely high. And this got me thinking when I was, you know, reading about this, it had me thinking, like, you know, we talked about the last week or the week before, we're talking about the American Airlines pilot that saw the UFO. Mm-hmm. And it got me thinking that this is how when we're talking about UFOs, we have to remember these UFO sightings could either be man-made or they could be extraterrestrial made. Those are the options as far as we know.
Yes.
And I think what a lot of people don't realize is that a lot of these UFO sightings, a lot of them are most likely man-made UFOs. They have the technology to do that because the way that the story goes or the theory goes is that Roswell was sort of the first event where we got our hands on extraterrestrial technology. We got these flying saucers and we recovered them and we immediately got to work to reverse engineering their technology. And it's been a while since Roswell, 60 plus years since Roswell. So many believe that we have completely 100% reverse engineered this technology. And now the military government has the ability to create these anti-gravity flying saucer type craft or these big V winged craft. Because if you've ever seen like modern day stealth bombers, they look like fucking like UFOs.
Yeah, they really do.
Like yeah, they V do. Ones, like you're like, some of them look straight up like UFOs and they all have the lights on it. So when you think about it, you know, what were we actually seeing when we see UFOs? Are we seeing something extraterrestrial or are we seeing
something unusual something we haven't seen yet?
Man-made or perhaps military testing something? Because if these programs are truly top secret and truly special, you know, unacknowledged programs, then it's very possible that they're doing this covertly and they're not telling anybody about it.
Hmm.
So back to the U-2. So Air Force officials knew the majority of these unexplained sightings were the U-2 test, but they were not allowed to reveal these details to the public. So naturally, natural phenomena or high altitude weather research became the go-to explanations for UFO sightings, including in 1960 when Gary Powers' U-2 spy plane was shot down over Russia. And then the U-2 operations halted in the late 1950s, but other top secret military aircrafts continued tests at Area 51. Over the years, the A-12 and numerous stealth aircrafts like the Bird of Prey, F-117A, and the Tackett Blue have all been developed and tested in the Nevada desert. And more declassified documents revealed Area 51's role in Project Have Donut, a 1970s attempt to study covertly obtained Soviet MIGs, which are just basically Soviet planes that we got a hold of, apparently. And we found this out through declassified documents. Huh. So basically, the point of telling you this is that it's very clear that a lot of work being done at Area 51 has to do with building new types of aircrafts, testing them, and that could be an explanation for the increased number of UFO sightings in the area around Area 51.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of the lights that you see, a lot of the different things could in fact just be the military testing out new aircraft that we've never seen before.
Yeah.
This is where it gets interesting though, because a lot of people are like, okay, well, how did it get so famous? Why is it such a big deal now? And it all started with a man by the name Bob Lazar. And this guy's a very interesting dude.
He's a famous dude.
Yeah, he is. So in 1989, a man named Bob Lazar contacted a local Las Vegas TV station asking for a chance to make his story public. Lazar claimed he had been employed as a physicist on Project Galileo, the government's most highly classified project at the time. The activity focused on reverse engineering of alien technology so that the government could put it to good use, and studies were carried out at a top secret base dubbed S4, which S4 is located 10 miles south, supposedly of Area 51 near Papoose Lake.
Papoose.
So it's a kind of an extension of Area 51, and it's supposedly these secret hangars.
Hmm.
Apparently, according to Bob Lazar, the S4 facility has 9 aircraft hangars embedded into the mountain. And the hangar doors were designed at an angle matching the mountain slopes. So they literally looked like they're cloaked. So you can't even tell that they're there because they are like masked by the shape of the mountain. They blend in. So you can't see them. Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And Bob Lazar claims that while going to the S4 facility, he said he went there several times, he actually saw 9 different extraterrestrial vehicles or flying saucers at the base during December 1988 and April 1989 when he worked there. And he presented technical details regarding their propulsion mechanism, which functioned on amplified gravity waves generated by a reactor placed on the bottom of the craft. And so his job was to research the fuel for the craft, which is a compound with the atomic number 115. This element had unusual properties that allowed flying saucers to bend space around them, and it couldn't be synthesized on Earth. This alien technology allowed for point A and point B to be dragged together, thus reducing the traveling distance to a few minutes flight, regardless of the distance. And what's interesting about this is when we were listening to the podcast with Joe Rogan and Tom DeLonge, Tom DeLonge brought this up too. And talked about how he claims that he actually has this technology, that his company has this technology that Bob Lazar is working on, and this element 115. He was trying to explain this weird element that if you shoot electrons over it literally bends like space-time.
Yeah.
Because it creates its own atmosphere around it that is separate from the Earth's atmosphere. And therefore has no gravity. It's not beholden to any gravity.
Well, isn't that what John Teeter talked about too? Like shooting an electron over for time travel.
Something similar to it. I can't remember what he said specifically, but
definitely something about shooting an electron.
It makes sense, but yeah, element 115 allows basically the flying saucer or spacecraft to be able to create its own atmosphere where there's no gravity, which then allows all these crafts to do all these crazy maneuvers, to go in all these different directions. They're not limited to Earth's atmosphere or its gravity. So it's pretty incredible, actually.
Yeah, it's really, really hard to even like understand.
Yeah, so it's called element 115 is called Moscovium, and it's a synthetic chemical. And according to Bob Lazar and people that know about this element 115, they're saying that it absolutely is not something that could be found on this planet. That it has to be from space. It could only be made in space.
Wow, that's so crazy. Isn't that crazy?
And this is real, guys. This is fucking real. You can Google all this stuff.
Tom kept talking about this like piece of metal they have.
Yes. And as supposedly, they're going to come out and show the world that they've got this metal and that
we'll see.
They're going to blow over our minds with this technology. And I think this is all part of disclosure and hopefully, you know, unveiling all of these technologies that have been kept from us, and we'll change the world as we know it. Cause if we have the ability to manipulate space time like that, I mean,
that's huge.
All bets are off, you know?
Yeah.
So, all right. Here's a quote from Bob I wanted to read. I am exactly sure of what I saw, and I know what mainstream science is like. I know where physics stands. I know all of that, and this is an extraterrestrial craft. This technology is hundreds and hundreds of years in advance of us, and that's the end of that story.
Wow, that's so interesting, dude.
Yeah, apparently Bob Lazar received briefings regarding the history of extraterrestrials on Earth for the past 100,000 years, from aliens who originated from the fourth planet of the binary stellar system, Zeta Reticula 2.
Zeta Reticula?
Mm-hmm. We always come back to Zeta Reticula.
Always.
And not only that, but we always come back to the gray aliens. It's always the grays. The grays are very involved with
yeah,
society whatever, yeah. and just us in general.
That's what it seems like. It I seems mean, we like. Don't know.
Yes. And that's that the they're gist. From this Zeta Reticulus star system. And Bob also claimed to have worked on a flying disc with a diameter of 9 to 12 meters. And the craft apparently had a commanding console, and the seats were small, almost as built for children. Ooh. Because if you don't know anything, like if you don't know anything about gray aliens, we believe gray aliens are much smaller, 3 to 5 feet tall, or even maybe smaller than that. So they're like toddlers, basically, like the size
yeah.
wise.
Yeah.
So a lot of people believe that the UFOs that crashed at Roswell were piloted by these gray aliens.
Yeah.
So these claims from Bob Lazar are pretty interesting. And after he went public, his life was put at risk. He actually got shot once and received countless threats from different groups of interest and different sketchy individuals, which is not surprising considering he went on the news. So the whole point with Bob Lazar is that he was the first one that really went on the news and was like, hey, guys, this is what I saw. This is what's going on, and really broke the story open about Area 51 and about the yeah. alien technology being researched.
Really
and,
brought it to the surface
and really brought it to brought it to the public. So mm-hmm. here is I'm going to play a just a news clip because it's got Bob Lazar in it from talking about it from a couple of years from 2015 oh, about cool. this stuff. It's really I don't know. I just found it really fascinating. So let me play this for you guys.
What year is this from?
What? Years ago, young angry it's from Francis and I were 2015. It's got so it's not all Bob Lazar talking. It's got the newscasters talking, but it's all relevant to what we're talking about right now. And I just it's like 5 minutes, but it's good.
All right, let's play.
It's
it.
Worth it.
Let's do it.
All right. Here we go.
We're prepping for the 5 o'clock news when we learned that our scheduled live interview had canceled. We placed a call to aviator John Lear to ask if he could get a friend of his to fill the spot, a guy who reportedly worked out near Area 51 and had seen flying saucers out there. It sounded outrageous at the time, but that interview with Bob Lazar turned Area 51 upside down. We coaxed a reluctant Lazar into returning to Las Vegas to talk about it.
I don't know. Sometimes I really do regret it. And almost
now,
I almost feel like apologizing to him, saying that, you know, I'm sorry I let things out. Can I have my job back?
25 years after he was forever transformed into Bob the UFO guy, Bob Lazar says he regrets ever talking about flying saucers or a secret base in the Nevada desert or any of the things that made his name known all over the world.
There isn't a day I don't get emails. And, you know, I try and get this across to him. Look, I don't even want to talk about it anymore. You know, well, I don't believe the story. Great, pass it around. You know, I really don't want you to because it makes life difficult for me.
A quarter century ago, not many people yeah, outside of Nevada had ever heard of Area 51, the mysterious base 100 miles north of Las Vegas, a place the government said didn't exist. It was the location of choice for all manner of black projects, spy planes that were kept secret from the public.
And that's my driveway, that's Bob, that's Gene Huff, and Bob's wife Tracy and Chris, and we're just waiting there for 5 o'clock to roll around.
Former CIA pilot John Lear remembers the day that Area 51 became a household name.
Hi, John.
This is home video he shot as a KLAS news truck prepared to broadcast a live interview from Lear's home. Lazar was understandably nervous.
Yeah, he was nervous because he was putting it all out on the line there, and here he was going to, you know, reveal all this secret that he'd signed, you know, that he was going to never tell anybody.
It's not only a crime against the American people. It's a crime.
In the interview, Lazar's face was hidden, and he used a pseudonym, Dennis, which was the first name of his boss out in the desert.
Well, there's several, actually nine flying saucers. Flying
Lazar claimed he worked intermittently at a location called S4, south of Groom Lake, the main facility of Area 51. He said the hangars had been built into the side of a mountain disguised as desert, and inside were a set of nine flying saucers. Months later, he revealed his identity to the world and said the technology he'd worked on was from somewhere else, that it was being taken apart to figure out how it worked.
The reason that they're round and have no sharp edges is to contain the high voltage.
When you get yourself in position...
All right, I'll stop it there, but I don't think I can insert this into the video because it's just a news.
Yeah, it's not a YouTube
news
clip,
but I'll link it in the description for you guys so you guys can go watch the full thing. It's pretty interesting because it also goes on to talk about how Bob basically like knew about the testing of some of these man-made UFO craft or these flying saucers that the government or the military had built. And when he was actually out of it, he actually was able to, he knew of the time, the place, and where they could actually see the testing take place. And sure enough, they actually have footage of like a UFO over this mountain range where exactly where Bob Lazar said it would happen. So it's pretty clear that he was, you know, somehow involved with this.
Yeah.
And it's actually been pretty difficult for a lot of people to verify his background because apparently, I don't know if this is 100% true or not, but his hospital birth records, college manuscripts, and employment evidence have all been erased, and there's no evidence of him working also at the Los Alamos National Laboratory. So
what?
He basically, like, because he came forward and he's like, you know, he whistleblowed. He
broke terms of the service.
Yeah, exactly.
But his birth certificate?
Yeah, I don't know. That's crazy, isn't it? His birth records. I don't know if that means his birth certificate or not, but.
Wow. Can you imagine they just get rid of your birth records? That seems crazy.
But Bob also offered a consistent amount of evidence supporting his assertions, and he has since gained many followers. A lot of people think he is a very credible source with a strong background in physics and engineering, because that's what he is. He's a scientist. He's a physicist. He's in, you know, he understands all of this anti-gravity stuff and all of the physics behind it. But there are skeptics that think that the entire scenario is just an act played out by Bob in order to personally benefit from it, which I don't understand that at all, because he lost his job. He got so much shit and death threats, shot.
Yeah,
you know,
there's
why
no benefit
would he? Why
him,
would
like,
he
ruined his life?
Right? Why would somebody do that? And he doesn't seem like the type of person that would just do that just because.
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Any sense?
And so when Bob came out and did this, that's what really blew up Area 51 and made it super popular. And now everybody tries to go there. I mean, I want to try to go there and see it and see if we can take a look at it.
That's crazy. I'm not fucking with that.
But it is a very popular destination. They named a highway out there after it called Extraterrestrial Highway. I forget.
Extraterrestrial Highway.
Yeah, in Nevada.
That's funny.
So, Area 51, final thoughts. I think I'm with Kendall, and I think that if there was anything extraterrestrial from an outer space, it's since been moved ever, you know, after Bob Lazar really like burst the bubble for them, the secrecy bubble. No, yeah. Seriously though, like he burst their bubble, and so therefore that, you know, mm-hmm. with all this attention and stuff, they're not going to keep anything extra. I mean, I would be shocked, but another thought is that there's underground, like they may have built, because like if you can actually look up Area 51 on Google Maps now, they used to have it like blocked out, but now you can actually Google it and look at
just
it.
Anyone can.
It doesn't even look like somewhere that you would think there would be all this like crazy technology and possibly alien bodies, but well, that's the thing is like chances are these, you know, a lot of these bases go way deep underground, stories underground, 10 stories underground. So who knows? There might still be stuff there, but from the surface, it just looks like they're testing aircraft and testing things like that. So that is Area 51. Now, this is interesting because this is not confirmed. This is just speculation, but it is very interesting. I thought you guys would also find it interesting. And that is off the coast of Point Doom, I think it's Doom or Dume in Malibu, California, 6 miles off the coast, there's an unusual looking structure on the seabed floor. And based on images obtained on Google Earth, the oval-shaped object has a huge flat top and has what appears to be pillars or columns that seem to reveal an entrance to a darker inner place.
Whoa.
So this is I'll put this image in there and I'll link the Google map for you so you can see it yourself. It's pretty interesting though. I went on there and had to look at this for myself, and sure enough, literally 6 miles off the coast, you can see this bizarre, almost like egg-shaped oval.
You can see it?
Right there.
That's it. Oh my God, that's huge.
Yeah, you see that? So it's like an oval. Look how everything else looks. Look how there's like this shelf and then there's like this oval here. And this is just like the top angle to it. You can actually go down and you can kind of see underneath. There's like, see how there's like
pillars.
Yeah, there's like little pillars there, like 1, 2, 3, 4 underneath it. And it just does, it looks out of place almost because it's like so perfectly oval shaped.
What? I'm confused because isn't this like just a picture of the land flat?
Yeah. So well, no, this is a 3D view. I'm sorry. It's three-dimensional. Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. All right. It's a three-dimensional view.
Wow, that's weird.
So it could just be an anomaly, but it's approximately 2,000 feet below the surface and measuring nearly 3 miles wide. So what exactly is this thing? And according to the radio program Fade to Black, the researchers that have been looking, which is the holy grail for, if you don't know what Fade to Black is, it's a UFO radio-based program with researchers who've been looking at this stuff for over 40 years. And the host, Jimmy Church, has said that one of his listeners named Maxwell contacted him last month and sent him the Google Earth image showing that odd underwater object or structure underneath the coast. Yeah. And Jimmy actually asked his graphic designer to capture as many angled images of the anomaly as he could, because he wanted to find a way to get under and above the water so that you could really see, you know, what the columns looked like. And yeah, the images that he came up with are, and I'll link that for you guys so you guys can see those images, but it just shows you different views of that Google Earth image. So you can actually see the pillars or columns underneath the oval structure better. And it is very interesting because when you're looking at it from above, it's nearly a perfect oval shape. And in the natural surroundings, nothing is symmetrical.
Yeah,
it
that's
looks
really
very
weird.
Symmetrical, doesn't it?
Everything is eroded and covered in rocks.
Everything is eroded and covered in rocks and sloping and peaking.
And right here for 2 miles, it's a perfect
oval.
For 2 miles.
With a black separation or outline to it. I'm sure all of you are like Googling it right now. Like, it's literally search for Point Mugu State Park, M-U-G-U, and right off the coast, you'll see it. And it looks really out of place. I mean, it just looks totally different from everything else that's around here, and it looks like it could be some sort of structure compared to everything else. I mean, this is the cliff of the ocean bed shelf or whatever. Yeah, isn't that bizarre? But of course, you know, ever since that they started talking about this, one of the U.S. Geological Survey geologists named David Schwartz has said that he thinks it is natural and is just a part of the continental shelf. Of course, it's just a complicated part of what's now offshore that has seen some erosion and maybe slumping when perhaps this was just partially exposed when the sea level was lower.
That's true.
This is a really major earthquake area, and perhaps some of these features are a result of slope failures due to shaking. So there's no flag under the water that says I'm the entrance to an alien base. There's nothing unnatural looking about it. It's just showing some sort of variation.
Yeah, like wouldn't people have gone down and like seen it?
Well, it's 2,000 feet down, so it's pretty far down. You'd have to get
how does that Google image show us that?
Well, I'm telling you, like the satellites above flying around the Earth can probably photograph the bottom of the ocean. I guess that is the bottom of the ocean. So
wow,
yeah,
whoa,
they can penetrate extremely deep
that's
into
crazy.
The earth, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we definitely want to know what you guys think about that. Do you think it is some sort of structure? I think it could be, because if you think about it, why wouldn't they do that? Like, why wouldn't they build an under, you know, if you believe that they're possibly building structures on the moon and other planets and shit, why wouldn't they do it under the ocean? What a better place to hide a top secret installation other than under the ocean.
Yeah.
All right, this is perhaps my favorite one we'll talk about today. And that's the Dulce Underground Military Base. This is one that you can't see on Google Earth. I tried to find it. But the Dulce Military Base is an alleged joint human and alien underground facility that is as highly classified as Area 51 and is under the Archuleta Mesa on the Colorado-New Mexico border near the town Dulce, New Mexico.
Wow.
So not far from us. We could even go down there sometime and try to see if we can
find it.
See anything. And apparently it was allegedly inhabited by a battalion of gray aliens conducting...
But who is this from? Where, experiments what is the source
on, for this? I'll explain. Don't worry. Okay. This is a wiki explanation for it. Because
a
it's,
wiki?
It's a story. No, it's just... It's a
the story of it.
There's okay. a story around it. I got you. And okay. I'll explain okay. it more here in a sec. Ahead. There's people that... Basically, there's whistleblowers, insiders that have worked at this facility that are telling us this information.
I gotcha.
Is what it is. It's all insider. So, yeah, it was inhabited by a battalion of gray aliens, and they were conducting experiments on humans, which is not unlikely, under the watch of the U.S. military. And supposedly, eventually, paranoia and tensions ran high, which resulted in a deadly firefight, which exposed the Dolce base level 7. Now, what does that mean exactly? Well, that's where somebody by the name Philip Schneider comes in, and he's a real person. You can look him up. And he claims to have been a former U.S. government geologist and engineer. And he's actually one of the more notable people in the Dolce Air Force Base stories. So this is a underground base that hasn't been officially confirmed. Like, this isn't like, right, you can't yeah. find it.
No.
So this is like...
The same as like Bob Lazard saying that.
Right.
Yeah, before.
And apparently, he allegedly worked as a geological engineer contracting for the government in its construction of a program known as DUMB.
DUMB?
Yeah. Or deep under... They use, like, things like that, like acronyms for their projects.
DUMB.
Like, you just heard the last one was, like, Have a Donut was the name. And this yeah. is legit. Like, the CIA uses, Have like, code names yeah. like that. Or the military. DUMB, which stands for Deep Underground Military Bases. And according to Schneider... This system of bases spans the continental U.S. with over 100 interconnected subterranean tunnels. So I don't know about you, but I believe there's a whole system of tunnels underneath the entire country, most likely, oh, yeah. that connects the bases.
For sure.
Connects the bases. There could even be a tram running between the bases. But according to Philip, within the Dolce base's 7 levels... Schneider had clearance to construct a system of tunnels under Secret Service supervision. And one day while digging, he and colleagues experienced technical difficulties. And in their attempt to fix the problem, they encountered gray aliens.
Huh.
And according to Philip, a battle ensued in which he was one of three survivors out of 60 men.
Jeez.
And during the battle, accounts alleged that these aliens shot lasers from their chests, burning off some of Schneider's fingers and a leg.
What?
Apparently, after the battle, Schneider dedicated his life to serving as a whistleblower, exposing the events that occurred during his time there. And there are videos of Schneider describing the experiments conducted deep underground by the Greys on live humans. He said that human specimens were kept in liquid-filled capsules where the Greys experimented with human DNA.
Sounds like a fucking movie.
It does, but what's interesting about this is that there are a lot of insiders and whistleblowers and people that have worked in these programs that have come forward and have corroborated these stories about not only humans testing on aliens, but aliens testing on humans.
Oh, that's so fucking creepy.
And Schneider said that the Greys would absorb the blood of humans and cattle for sustenance, which
Jeez.
Sort of makes sense because... We'll get into that into a whole nother episode, but there's cattle mutilations. There's all sorts of weird things that have happened, confirmed things.
So creepy.
And there's no...
I haven't looked at cattle mutilations yet.
It's really... Yeah, there's a lot to it. And it points to something extraterrestrial like these gray aliens, possibly.
What?
But what's interesting is that the fate of Philip Schneider really adds to the level of this conspiracy and the extent at which intelligence agents are involved. So government agents. Schneider spent the last part of his life giving speeches about his alleged experiences at the Dolce base. And he often said he was being watched by the government and that if he was ever found to have committed suicide, one could assume he was murdered. So okay. he thought because he came forward and whistleblowed on these events that happened at the Dolce base,
they would kill him and make it look like a suicide.
Right. Which is pretty typical, you would think. And in 1996, Schneider was found dead with the cord of a catheter wrapped around his neck in what was labeled a suicide.
Catheter?
Yeah.
Who strangles themselves with a catheter?
I don't know. Or who's somebody set something up. I mean, something weird happened with that.
Seems like it.
So that's a pretty bizarre story from Philip Snyder. And another name that's involved with the case is a security guard on the base named Thomas Costello. And he allegedly witnessed this project as well and saw local missing persons underground being experimented on by the Greys.
You know what? I really wouldn't be shocked. I've thought about it so many times. There are so many people missing. So many missing persons. It's insane. It is truly mind-blowing. And
where I think this would going?
Make sense. Like government testing or alien testing.
It sounds crazy, but it's not really that crazy.
So sad, though. Scary.
It's very scary. And the security guard said that he witnessed the rising tension and paranoia between the thousands of aliens and government employees in advance of the violent battle as well. But there isn't much else about him. So he's not as verifiable as Philip Snyder is, but yeah. It is very interesting. And some further proof for this Dulce base comes from a little over a year ago. A local newspaper interviewed Dulce residents on the Jicarilla Apache Reservation, home to about 2,500 people, and residents of the town are quick to discuss their experiences and sightings of UFOs and strange phenomena around the base. So there's a big Apache Indian reservation not far from Dulce, New Mexico. It's in like kind of like the Four Corners area. And they have reported all sorts of bizarre sightings and cattle mutilations and all sorts of weird things happening around that area.
Interesting.
And it's actually become the next tourist stop after Roswell. That we have to do like a trip. We got to go to Roswell. We got to go to Dulce.
Yeah.
And just like
do an alien trip.
We should do like definitely do like a little vlog or something about that. Cause it's, I'd love to see like some of this with my own eyes if
Me
I can.
Too.
Here's another interesting story though. One account from a state trooper in 1975 has also sort of maintained the hype and excitement around Dulce. And this state trooper named Gabe Valdez reported coming across mutilated cattle carcass in a field outside of Dulce. And Valdez said he discovered a fetus inside the cattle that he described as looking like a human, a monkey, and a frog. It didn't have any bones in the head.
What the fuck?
It was all full of water.
Are you sure he wasn't smoking some green?
I'm telling you guys.
It doesn't have any bones in the head.
The more and more I research this and look into it, it's becoming more and more clear to me that it's not unlikely that some of these special access programs that are highly top secret and operating underground in underground bases or just underground is experimentation on human DNA and attempting to create hybrid beings. So crossing us with every type of animal possible kind of goes into like Emery Smith that we were talking, you know, that's a whole nother thing, podcast, but it, when I read this, it really kind of like fits with what he was saying too.
Yeah,
so
it does.
It's very possible that they are experimenting, either it's aliens experimenting on human DNA and trying to, better themselves. Something weird's going on. And so the state trooper also said, what he saw looked like an incubation chamber for a clone creature, much like the experiments purported to have taken place deep below ground. And after discovering the carcass, Valdez alleges he found listening devices in his home and reported UFO sightings. Valdez claims there are four underground bases at Dulce, which are now inactive, but he does not believe there were any alien beings there. He said he believes the UFOs he saw were not necessarily extraterrestrial, but highly advanced stealthy military aircraft. Yeah. Including silent black helicopters.
Wow. Silent.
So that's the thing. It's like a whole battle between what's extraterrestrial actually and what's just really the military and their highly advanced, possibly extraterrestrial technology. It's just like, which one is it?
Who's
flying these UFOs around? So is it possible that through Valdez's story, could he be implying that his discoveries uncovered some bizarre biological experiments conducted by the government, which is what we just talked about? I think it definitely feeds into that narrative that they're doing some bizarre experiments, this last bit. So the last bit of this is the kind of where the Dulce base thing kind of started. And that's with the story of a person named Paul Benowitz, who's a key figure in the perpetuation of this Dulce base. And in the 1970s, Benowitz researched secret government programs conducted at the Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque. And Benowitz's research revealed information that he said made government officials nervous. And to prevent him from further discovering secret programs, government operatives, namely Richard Doty, were tasked with feeding Benowitz false stories about alien bases in New Mexico. Which Richard Doty
less credible
is in Dr. Stephen Greer's documentary.
Oh, is he?
He's the one of the guys that was talking about this stuff.
And he was told, and he had to give this guy false
info? Yeah, he had to give him false info.
Wow, and he admits to it that he did that?
Yeah, so he says they employed the help of a famous ufologist, William Moore, who co-authored the Roswell incident. And Doty and Moore's efforts drove Benowitz to the brink of paranoid insanity. And it seems that much of the propagation of the Dulce Air Force Base battle can be attributed to Benowitz and the government's insidious operation to subversively drive him insane. And if Benowitz's story was proven to be fabricated by Doty, where does Schneider's story fit in? So basically, the angle with this is that it's possible that these stories were, when Richard Doty was a part of these government programs, his job was to push this false narrative about this battle and stuff and all this underground bases and stuff. And I don't have the actual words from Richard Doty about this, but I'm sure he's probably talked about it, maybe even in unacknowledged. But basically, it's possible. There's so much like misinformation that can be going around. Like the government is very good at what they feed us. They are very good.
Yeah.
Because they know what gets us like intrigued and excited and sends us down this rabbit hole. Yeah. But in real life, it's
That's why you just have to like really look at it, you know, take everything with a grain of salt and kind of like, you know, it's all interesting to learn about.
Yes.
We don't know.
But because of this, we did find out about some of these government black budget or classified programs. So is it possible that Schneider was actually on the cusp of exposing some of these black programs biological experiments are going on? And that's why he got knocked off. Yep. And, you know, I think if anything, all of this is implications that the government does do foul play in order to cover up.
Oh, of course.
These types of programs and experiments.
People that were testifying against, like in the JFK, you know, people were killed the night before they had to testify. They killed themselves.
Mm. Well, that's the thing is like that we're getting smarter and smarter, and we're starting to figure out that they lie to us. They cover stuff up. They cover stuff up constantly, and they constantly try to feed us misinformation. And that's the whole thing with Tom DeLonge and his company To the Stars and all of their stuff that they're doing is they're trying to, you know, they're clearly in cahoots with the government, the CIA. That's totally the, you know, elites program for sure. Like Hillary Clinton and John Podesta are tied to Tom DeLonge.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah.
They're tied. Well, they're all intermingled. So anything that has to do with John Podesta or Hillary Clinton, I'm out, because the shit that is out there on those two is insane.
Agreed.
As far as corruption and even worse than that.
Yeah, so, we're not even going to go there.
Yeah, so just so to end this episode, you have to take everything that the media gives you, you know, anything that you read on the internet with a grain of salt, because we don't know for sure. A lot of this stuff is witness testimony, insider information, people that claim to be whistleblowers.
And there's got to be some truth in there. It's just like a matter of which things are true and which ones are not, like filtering through.
It's very hard, though. It's very difficult to filter through it, because there's so much misinformation. And, you know, same with UFO sightings and stuff. You know, we can't assume that every UFO is a, you know, extraterrestrial craft. It could definitely be a military craft. So,
yeah,
just keep that in mind. But we'll definitely do some more episodes about some of the stuff, some of these bases. I mean, there's so much more. It's impossible to cover it all in one episode. But hopefully you guys enjoyed this episode
on super interesting
secret bases.
Sorry I didn't talk much for the second half of it. Josh was just like going.
I'm extremely passionate about this stuff.
I was just like, I'm just going to let him do it. I'm just going to let him go.
I'm extremely passionate about this secret base stuff. And
it's interesting, dude.
Alien cover up. So hopefully you guys enjoyed it.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening to episode 14.
Episode 14 is in the books. And guys, we will be doing a Patreon live stream next Thursday.
You want to do it next Thursday?
Yeah, let's just do it.
Yeah. Okay. Next Thursday at
4 p.m. 3:30 p.m.
5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time next Thursday. will be patron only live stream, all levels.
Okay, all levels. All patrons are invited.
All right.
But if you do want to stream with us whenever.
We're on Twitch all the time.
We're on Twitch, baby. All right, guys. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for listening.
On this episode of the Mile Higher Podcast. Until next time, stay woke, my friends. And I've been quiet for so long.